Our third remarkable woman on this week comes again as a pair. Danielle Claude writes marvellous books about nature. She grew up with boats, lives in South Australia, and went to Balliol College, Oxford. Her latest book, as we foreshadowed on the Science Show a few weeks ago, is the story of the first woman to sail around the world. Chances are you've never heard of Jeanne Barré, unless you heard the Science Show in June or are in Breakfast on Tuesday. So here's Danielle with the full incredible story published this week.
I came across her when I was researching my earlier book on French voyages to Australia, voyages to the South Seas, and it struck me on those voyages that despite the fact that no women were supposed to be on the ships, they were forbidden, there seemed to be a woman on just about every voyage that sailed out, either dressed as a man or stowed away in the captain's wife or taken on board in Australia and returned back to Mauritius. So there were women always in the background and very little known about any of them. They're a mystery, what they did and why they were there and why they made that choice.
When did she set off?
She set off in 1767 from France, so she was about 26 years old, and she was away for nearly 2 years on the voyage. So it was a two-year journey around the world, and it was the first French circumnavigation and the first circumnavigation by a woman.
How do you know that?
Well, I should say it's the first circumnavigation by a woman that we know of. It's possible that because women aren't often included in the records because they're often simply deleted, as Jeanne herself often was. You see it in the diaries. Her traces are written out of different versions. So it's possible there are others, but this is the earliest one we know of.
And Commerson is a scientist and they went on the ship together, she dressed as a boy and his companion. Now, one of the frightening things as I read your book, how did they not get sprung, especially when you've got toilets, which are virtually the head, in other words, the front of the ship, and you're on a plank, half naked, and it took a year before they actually realised she was a woman.
It's difficult to imagine how she managed that. The issues of toilets, I think, is a really big question. She was known not to undress in front of anybody, obviously. I think her life became a lot easier after South America because it was pretty clear that Commerson was given the captain's cabin to occupy at that time, possibly because his collections were so large, it was clear that he was going to need the space. Possibly also because the captain might have been aware that Jeanne was a woman and that was an easier option. And the captain's cabin generally has its own toilet.
But even though she did an awful lot of the scientific work aboard, she's not credited in the papers, is she, scientifically?
No, apart from the genus of plants that Commerson named after her, but that hasn't become an accepted name in the literature, so that's not been retained. And that's mainly because he didn't publish his work, so those credits aren't there. He was very bad at paperwork. He died early and didn't finish his work, so therefore any reference to her has been lost.
Jeanne came from Burgundy. And was she from humble stock? What was she like? What was her family like?
She came from a peasant family, so the very poorest of the poor. Burgundy was a very poor region at the time, and her father was a hand worker, a manoeuvre, so a labourer. Didn't own any property, couldn't read or write. So really the very poorest of French society.
So how did she become sophisticated enough to go in company like she did?
Well, it seems likely that she was employed as a domestic servant for Commerson after his wife died, because that was in a nearby village to where she was born. And it seems that he found her to be more useful than just as a servant. And he probably taught her to write at least her name and to help him with his botanical work. So he liked people who were smart and didn't really care where they came from.
Perfectly clear that he was very, very smart himself. But you say the only writing you've come across of her writing is her signature. There's nothing else.
Not that I can find. There is a theory that one of the documents in Commerson's archives, which is a table of medicinal plants, is written by Jeanne, but there's no reason to think it is or no reason to think it isn't, and there is nothing else written by her other than her signing legal documents. And, of course, medical practitioners at the time, their main focus was medicinal plants. That was the main tool in their arsenal, as it were. So he would have been very likely to have written that as well.
And the world trip was for what reason?
Well, predominantly the Bougainville voyage was a matter of national pride. So it was because they wanted to have a French circumnavigation and make great discoveries and all of those sorts of things. The French were always very committed to science. So this was actually the first voyage that had an official naturalist on board. So it was the start of the great scientific voyages that came out of France at this time. And Commerson had an excellent reputation as a naturalist. Linnaeus wanted him to work for him. I think Voltaire wanted him to work for him. There was all sorts of people who valued his intelligence and capability. So he was quite renowned for that.
And when Jeanne was invited by Commerson to come on the ship as a companion, dressed as a boy, any record about whether she just did it or was she preparing for it in a nervous way?
So she was employed as his servant, a valet in effect, so his personal servant. Other officers also had servants aboard, so she was paid by the king to be there. We have no record of what she thought, other than what she said to Bougainville, which was that she was inspired by curiosity and adventure to travel on the voyage. She had had at least one child in Paris and possibly given it up for adoption. So she was leaving behind family and friends, presumably, to make a voyage that she may not have survived, as many people didn't. So it was certainly a big decision for her to make.
So off they went. What was the route?
They sailed to South America and spent quite a lot of time in South America travelling down the coast, and that was probably where Jeanne made her biggest contributions in terms of collecting. They went down to the Magellan Strait and she did a lot of collecting there, and I think people found that quite noteworthy because it was really, really horrendous weather, lots of snow, very, very cold, and she was out there doing all the hard yards, and Commerson called her his beast of burden.
Beast of burden.
Yes. So they left the Magellan Strait, sailed across the Pacific to Tahiti, which was one of the quite early European visits, and that's where Jeanne was...
sprung.
Yes.
How did they spring her?
Well, the story goes that the Tahitian men were very interested to find women on the ships. I think that's a very common thing. People want to know why there are no women on these voyages, because why would you travel around the world and not have women with you? It's kind of odd, unless you're a war party, of course. And also the Tahitians had a very strong interest in having sex with other people. So there was a lot of sexual activity going on. The Frenchmen were certainly taking advantage of that with the Tahitian women. I guess the Tahitian men wanted to have their turn as well. So they were actively looking for where the women were hidden. And they found Jeanne. They recognised her for what she was. I guess for Europeans, we identify men and women by virtue of their clothing.
Even if you're a French sailor?
In an external way. So if she's not wearing the right coat, how do you know she's a woman? And Bougainville himself said you would never have known she was a woman. How could the Tahitians tell?
So were the crew and the other people aboard who'd been hoaxed in many ways, did they agree to carry on with diplomacy or what?
It's an interesting question. It's hard to know. It's possible, you know, some of them said, oh, well, we always knew. We knew from South America there were rumours, but nobody said so at the time. So I'm a bit suspicious about whether they did know or not. There was also an incident in New Ireland, New Britain area of New Guinea, and it seems likely that some of the servants then pinned her down and, you know, got their own proof, as it were. What sort of form of assault that was is unclear. It doesn't appear likely that she was raped, but it was certainly not a pleasant exercise, I should imagine. She did carry pistols with her at all times, which was probably for a reason. So, yeah, there was those complexities to the voyage. But it's interesting that other women who have travelled on ships at the same time and who have written diaries and stories about what happened to them tell accounts that once they've proven that they're useful and members of the crew and pull their own weight and are reliable, men generally don't pursue any attempt to get rid of them. So they sort of accept them as their shipmates. And there's numerous examples of that. So I think that probably after a year of being on the ship, Jeanne had been accepted for what she was and they just got on with it.
Good. And after Tahiti?
Yes, they sailed through Southeast Asia. They sort of hit the east coast of Australia, but hit the Great Barrier Reef near Cooktown and decided that that was not worth trying to navigate or get through because they were running short of fresh food by that time and they really wanted to get to Dutch Java and Batavia. So they headed north instead of going in closer and ended up in Batavia and from there sailed to Mauritius, which is where Jeanne left the ship.
And came back to France.
Yeah, well, after a little while, Jeanne and Commerson left at Mauritius so that Commerson could continue work on what Mauritius was then called Île-de-France, and he wanted to continue his botanical work there. So he stayed. He did an awful lot of work then, botanical work, probably without Jeanne's assistance. Jeanne, instead, seems to have pursued her own life then. She obtained property. She bought a bar and ran a very successful business, and she amassed quite a sizable fortune, in actual fact. And Commerson died in Mauritius, which is why his work sort of is incomplete. But a couple of years after Commerson dies, Jeanne has married and returns to France under her own steam with quite a lot of money.
We won't tell the entire story because the trip is really compelling, and the story of Jeanne, this humbly born person, peasant stock, illiterate, suddenly at the top of the field in many ways is really worth knowing about and reading. But also your pursuit of the clues, finding out in documents that really had been, well, almost hidden in crates for a long time and telling a story. But my final question really, what should we make of her? Was she really a person who should be recognised not only for travelling around the world, but for making a scientific contribution of merit? In other words, is she really a hero of history?
Well, Commerson himself has been under-recognised, I think, for his work. He was quite a significant figure of the age, and if he hadn't died when he did, he would have certainly been much better known. And Jeanne Barrée would have been well known along with him. So as it stands, I think the important thing about Jeanne is just that she pursued an uncharacteristic life. She went against what people thought she ought to do. And I think the important thing is to recognise her as a model for women who don't fit the mould and that they don't have to. A lot of work's been put into trying to make her fit a mould. You know, she's a loyal servant or a victim of sexual abuse or, you know, all these different stereotypes. But in actual fact, she's just a complex, unusual individual, and I think we should recognise her as that.
The Woman Who Sailed the World is published this week by Picador. The author is Daniel Claude, who now lives in South Australia.